I just keep on having like lumps of
sad.
Yeah. And like
lumps of emotion just bubbling through you. It's a very sad cauldron. It's a soup of sorrow.
That's going to be the intro, isn't it?
Almost certainly.
Anyways.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I am just a little guy.
Just a little guy?
Just a little guy.
Cassie, are you a Dalek?
No. What do you mean?
Yes.
I woke up like this.
Yes, today we'll be looking at Series 5, Episode 10, Vincent and the Doctor. I'm so very excited for this episode.
No kidding. I heard you last night talking to Haley about how excited you were for this episode. And then in my own way went, la 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 da, da 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 da, just so I wouldn't hear, because I hate when people are already like, oh, there's something coming up that you're going to like. Well,
so the truth is, and I don't want to color it too much because I know that.
You already have.
So this is another one of those episodes like Blink that gets brought up in the best Doctor Who episodes ever.
In the universe.
Yeah. Like the kind that anybody can watch and get. Like you don't really need to know much about the show beyond it. It's just a really solid episode, and I'm really excited for you to see it. And so I'm not going to ask you what you're expecting, because I want the episode just to wash over you. But we will still do the Cassie for Fassy today.
Okay.
I've deliberately not pulled up the preview image that Max shows, because sometimes it also has an episode description. And so to just try and avoid that, I'm just going to get a couple of quick questions off here.
Sounds good.
The episode is called Vincent and the Doctor because the Doctor is with a famous man named Vincent.
Uh-huh.
Do you have any thoughts as to which famous Vincent that might be?
So there's a couple options here.
Okay.
The first and least exciting would be like Vince Vaughn. Probably not Vince Vaughn. And then we're going to go in order from like, I'll just tell you the only other three Vincents I know.
Okay.
I get the very strong feeling it's probably Vincent Van Gogh.
Okay.
Just because this is a higher elevation sort of show. Not elevation, like, let me rephrase that. This is an elevated show in the fact that I feel that a lot of the people that engage with it are not your typical trash TV junkies.
Okay.
For lack of a better term. Not that my other two options are trash TV junkies, but I just don't get the feeling that the writers would lean into a Vincent Price angle.
Okay.
Which I personally would love.
Hello, Doctor. Nice to meet you.
Yes. May I ask when this episode aired, though? Because I could see them doing something like that for like, oh, it happens to be our Halloween episode, or it comes out during October, spooky time for part of the world.
This episode first aired in June 5th of 2010.
Okay, so there is not a lot going for Vincent Price being the titular Vincent. My third option, which I would love to see it, I don't think it's going to happen, is St. Vincent de Paul. Because as far as Catholic saints go, he's one of the good ones.
Okay.
Because for the first 20 years of his life, he did not want to be poor. He was like, I'm going to be a rich, wealthy man. Became a priest and then was kidnapped by pirates when he was returning back home and then served as a slave for 2 years in Northern Africa.
Oh, okay.
But he's like during his time after that, after he got out of servitude, he did do a lot to help the poorer communities in, I think the year was 16, like early 1600s, like France. I have to brush up on my Black Plague history, but that was around the time that a lot of that stuff kept on coming and going and dissipating and then coming back again. The Black mm-hmm. Plague was not a one-time like epidemic. It happened for long periods of history. However, he did do a lot of work for the poorer and marginalized communities. So we stand Vincent de Paul, which now, if any other thrifters out there know, is a very wonderful thrift store. The Vincent de Paul societies are some of the best places to go to get, and you can usually reason with them. I bought a bookend there and they had listed it at $20. And I was like, this is one single bookend. I literally can't find the other. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, $10. And I went, that's fair. Because it would be 20 for the set, but only 10 for one. Sure. And that is what we have that I used to prop open the door. That's the goose.
Nice.
Yeah. Needless to say, I don't think it's St. Vincent de Paul.
Okay.
I want it to be Vincent Price.
You don't think it's Vincent D'Onofrio?
I don't think it's Vince Vaughn either. No. So I'm leaning towards Vincent van Gogh. Simply because he is also somebody that is very popular.
Yeah.
As an artist, he is somebody that a lot of people can point at a famous painting and say, oh, I know the artist. I can, mm-hmm. I recognize who that is. Or, you know, any references towards cutting off ears because of manic depression. Fun fact, most of the stuff that he painted is because he was, just so very depressed.
Yep.
Like, I think, and it might be wrong, but Starry Nights was something that was painted during a stay in a like psych facility. I am most likely wrong with that fact. And I know all of the artists are going to start coming at me with their sharpened paintbrushes and icky water, but.
Well, this episode does touch on a lot of, fuck, I was giving it away there. You're right. It is Vincent van Gogh.
On mental health?
Yeah.
Woo! Well, I was gonna say, right!
It also focuses a lot on different paintings throughout his life as well. You'll see a lot of allusions to them. Go ahead and preemptively that point because I spilled the beans in a single sentence like a smart guy I am.
Yes, you did. Because I had already said I wanted desperately to be Vincent Price. I think that would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
I know it's not.
I feel like that would be a more if Doctor Who was a more American show, I could see that being a bigger thing, especially because Halloween just isn't a big thing in the UK.
Halloween isn't a big deal anywhere else but here.
I think it's big in Italy, if memory serves correctly.
Well, because it originated as a pagan holiday.
Yeah.
So a lot of the traditions that have been, you know, adjusted over time really settled into the U.S., particularly mm-hmm. with the use of pumpkins instead of turnips for jack-o'-lanterns and trick-or-treating as a means of getting children that were on the streets causing mischief to get treats instead of causing mischief and mayhem. That is why it is trick or treat. If you do not answer your door, then you, my friend, are in for a trick. Unless you are handing out treats and some little fuckface dressed up as Mike Myers decides to come up and steal your entire bowl of candy, you know, like a prick.
It's been like a month and you're still mad about that.
I just feel bad because I specifically used the orange bowl that looked better on the little setup that I'd made because it matched the skirt that I put out to dress up the stool because everybody deserves to be dressed up on Halloween. And the orange bowl wasn't mine and it was our roommate's and I still feel bad about it because it's part of a set. Now that set is broken and I'm still angry about it.
Yeah, I bet. Well, the good news is that while I did spill the beans on that first one, I do have a second Profassi question for you here today. Sort of in the vein of a lot of Profassi questions, you're going to have to guess the appearance of an alien.
Aw, man. Come on, dude.
One day I'll come up with a better question, I'm sure. But this, I will give you a category to pick through for your own choices. This alien is called a Crophaeus, and this resembles an oversized barn animal, or farm animal, I guess. What sort of oversized farm animal do you think this Crophaeus looks like?
Interesting. Okay, so farm animal. I assume you mean any sort of like hooved animal or poultry.
Yeah, we're talking like cows, chickens, pigs, horses, goats.
Could I give a general term like bovine?
Sure. Like if it were a cow or a bull, I would still count it.
Well, yeah, just because I'm also thinking, growing up, I had a friend that had a farm, mm-hmm. and they had one of the like Highland steers,
mm-hmm.
just because they liked him. He didn't do anything. He just kind of looked cool.
Yeah.
And like he did protect the other like cows and stuff, but mm-hmm. more often than not, he would just kind of chill.
Like if you pick chicken and it looks like a rooster, I'm not gonna not count that. If you
But if I said, oh, it's or like if I said like, oh, a waterfowl between goose and swan.
Yeah, or duck, I would take it. Yeah. Anyways, yeah.
Okay. I don't think it's a bird.
Okay.
I am leaning more towards a hooved animal, but I'm juggling between cow or goat.
Okay.
Kind of why I wanted to be cheap and say, oh, it's something with hooves, because that's cow, goat, or horse. I'm gonna say cow.
Okay. It resembles a large cow, a Crophaeus.
Yeah, just because that was also the first one that you said in your list. So or it could be a rooster, though. Hold on, I'm rethinking my thinks now.
Okay,
can I ask what it does?
The other thing is it doesn't do much.
Like, can I ask what it is?
The reason they see it is because they see it in the background of a painting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll stick with cow then.
Okay.
Because if it was something like the rhino police, where it was like, oh yeah, they're specifically doing blank thing. Like, okay, cool. That kind of informs.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just kind of in the background. Yeah, an unusually large cow would maybe draw attention. I don't know. I'm over this question. Let's move on.
All right. Let's find out together if a Crophaeus looks like a large cow as we watch Vincent and the Doctor. Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by Happy Little Accident Acrylics. Well, hey there, friend. Glad to see you back in your creative space. Brush in hand, heart full of possibilities. That's a beautiful thing. And to help you make your happy little trees or majestic mountain, I'd wanted to make some nice paints for you. However, I couldn't seem to get the colors just right, so now we have Happy Little Accident Acrylics, featuring such colors as, should I see a doctor? Red. And, why is it sticky? Yellow. And, uh-oh! Purple. So put these new shades on your palette, pick up that brush, and prepare to make something beautiful. Or whatever this looks like. Happy Little Accident Acrylics. I think it might be a face. And we are back from Vincent and the Doctor.
I'm not crying. You're crying.
I'm also crying. Yes, I am very much crying.
My God. I can feel you crying through the couch.
How are you doing over there, Cassie?
I'm doing so wonderful. You know, I just love having my sadness put up on display like that.
We call it a catharsis in art, I believe.
Catharsis,
yeah.
Catharsis. So, that's my catharsis. It's comedy.
Yeah, so...
Fuck off.
I think you could probably tell why this is one of those episodes everyone really, really likes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because it does something very nice with the use of, like... I'll call it a celebrity cameo, although we did also get one of those. Mm-hmm. So pleasantly, wonderfully surprised.
You were so happy the moment Bill Nighy walked on.
Oh my God, he's one of my favorite people of all time. And so, but the in this particular context, I'm going to use Vincent Van Gogh as the... Sorry, the sadness came up again. Just trying to crawl out. I'm gonna say celebrity cameo in specific reference to Vincent, because I feel like in the past couple times when we've had like a celebrity cameo in the form of William Shakespeare, Agatha Christie, it's clever and it is like a oh yeah you can total like that. That would be foolish of a show like this that explores time and space to not go back in time and basically live with like historical figures from like our past. That would be absolutely bonkers if they didn't ever do it. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is one of the first times though where the person that they are talking to or that is the celebrity cameo really does have an impact.
Yeah, it's more than a gimmick.
Yeah. And I suppose it could be chalked up to the fact that mental health is a very big and very scary thing to address and to put in the limelight, basically, just because 9 times out of 10, it can be received very or it's something that can be received very well, or it can be something that's like, oh, well, me. Which is me trying to not call anybody out specifically, but it can sometimes feel like, not my words, liberal snowflake propaganda.
Yeah.
And that's not how it should be. But more often than not, like, mental health issues are masked. Mm-hmm. And it's something that is a very... quiet. Everybody has some form of illness that they're dealing with.
Yeah.
But it is not something that is talked about because it is seen as a weakness. Mm-hmm. So it is very uplifting to see a show like Doctor Who addressing it with so much grace.
Yeah.
And delicacy in a way where, you know, jumping to the end, like, you still learn that Vincent Van Gogh killed himself at 37. And, you know, Amy's very excited because she's like, oh, all the new paintings, all the things. And, you know, the doctor having his pile of good and bad things monologue. Shut up, Cassie. You're not crying again thinking about it.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite, like, Matt Smith monologues where he says the specifics are life is a pile of good and bad things. And while the good things don't soften the bad things, likewise, the bad things don't spoil the good things. And it's one of those where like that sat with me since I first saw the episode.
My God, it's like an arrow through the heart.
Yeah. It's one of those where you're like, it's one of those things that is so obviously true when it's said. But until it's said, it doesn't, you couldn't put words to it.
Well, because even when you think about just everyday to day life, like, you know, a very direct, like, thing that I am currently actively dealing with is having to apply for jobs. And whenever the question of, you know, how do you deal with a difficult customer? Like, you know, what is one of the, like, what is a moment where you really showcased, like, whatever? And it's so difficult to then go through your, like, memory bank and think about times that were successful. Because the times that were chaotic and hard and scary. Those are the things that really stick out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's difficult to think back on like, oh, well, here was a number of positive interactions I had. Here's some of the positive, really wonderful things that happened just because those moments where things were stupid. And stupid in the like the situation that we're finding ourselves in is stupid. The reason why somebody is angry is stupid. Like mm-hmm. Those moments are the ones that stick out way more. And I think that it's important to specifically remind yourself that that is not your whole experience, either at a job, in a year, in a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Like those kind of ridiculous things that happen are not what makes your experience as a person in any circumstance whole, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I think part of what makes that ending hit so hard is that they did a really good job of fleshing out Vincent as a person.
Well, yeah.
Like the whole build up to that is like, because the real immediate part before that is we get a moment where we get to see the world the way Vincent does.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, he looks up at the night sky and he talks about how it's not black, but it's deep blue and there's a lighter blue over there. And then like, the wind is swirling around and the way the stars explode in the night. And then you watch as the night sky turns into this pastiche of starry night.
Yeah.
Building up to that, you have moments of like you see a real mood crash for Vincent.
Because then you also the real part of the episode starts with Amy hold or them looking for a cafe with orange light.
Mm-hmm.
And Amy holds up like her little, you know, museum booklet of the cafe painting with the orange light to the actual cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a really wonderful way to then see like, oh, cool. Like that is how the cafe looked to Vincent, the artist.
Mm-hmm.
And here's how it looks in life.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the similarities, but the like expressionism of like how Vincent the artist saw the orange light just illuminating the entire like that the entire corner of that block, and how in life, like, yeah, there is orange light coming out because there's orange light, but it's not warm and glowing and inviting, contrasted to the, you know, more cool like evening blue light from the world around it.
Yeah. And so it's our first little moment where we could tell that the world as we see it is different from the way the world Vincent sees it.
Something though that I've been seeing a lot more of is there's this one, and I'm so sorry, I don't remember, I don't know his name off the top of my head, but there's a content creator that comes up on my Instagram feed.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole deal basically is like color changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be him like on just kind of a dock. Like you see him setting up the camera, running down to whatever like the subject matter is. So there's one where he's like on a dock. The lake is very gray. The sky, like the world around him is very gray. It's a gloomy day. But then the second that he gets to the dock and starts walking back up to the camera, he puts a number of filters and stuff over it to evoke this very like, oh, it's very peaceful, like autumnal day. The, you know, the orange from the leaves are now highlighted and oh, it's so serene. Like I want to be there. When moments before you just saw him setting up and having the world be this like very dull, washed out colors, because that's the reality of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a nice reminder that the reality of the situation is, or like the reality, what you physically see is not always what a moment can feel like or what a moment can be like. Mm-hmm. And especially in terms of like art, it's very easy to get bogged down with like, well, I can't draw like this person. Like, I'm not a very good artist because my art doesn't look like blank.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a very good artist because, like, I'm not communicating, like, how I'm seeing something. But there is that thing to be constantly aware of. And it's not just like physical drawing, painting, sculpting, whatever artists. Like, mm-hmm. there is art to be found, or everybody has something that they do as a form of self-expression.
Yeah. We're and doing one right now.
Yeah, I suppose so. I start crying.
We get someone takes us to a museum in the future and all of our podcasts are hung up on the wall. Bill Nye's in the corner talking about how we're two of the greatest human beings to have ever lived.
No, I don't think so. But, you know, that would be that would be cool. I don't think this will end up in a museum, but I'm so sorry. There are so many other podcasts.
It's true. There's so many other Doctor Who podcasts, too.
Yeah, but somehow nobody had picked who's my doctor. That right. still fucking boggles my mind.
Right? And ain't that the truth?
One of my notes on here is just paintings. Good. Informative. Fuck you, Cassie.
So... I will let you know that the writer of this episode hasn't really written much else for Doctor Who. The writer of this episode is a man named Richard.
Because he peaked.
Yeah, this guy's a man named Richard Curtis. The only other Doctor Who story he's really worked on was The Curse of Fatal Death.
Incredible.
What?
That's all you need.
Would you like to know some of the other things he's worked on besides this? I think the thing that will appeal most to you is he worked on Mr. Bean.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, brother.
And some of his film credits include Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Okay, very
good. Notting
Hill.
Mm-hmm. Bridget Jones's Diary.
That is a hard name to say. Jones's Diary.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard consonants right after each other. And then he was the writer-director of Love Actually.
Whoa!
Which is probably how they got Bill Nye in this episode.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
I was like, Curse of Fatal Death, writer for Mr. Bean. Like, okay, yeah. Like, that makes sense then, that if they got Rowan Atkinson on, he went, hey, let's get this guy, or vice versa.
Yeah, It's so good.
What a collection.
Right? What a spectrum that man has worked on.
Because also, like, Bridget Jones's Diary, it's a very good movie.
Yeah, this guy does incredible work. I'm surprised he hasn't come back for Doctor Who for something, just because of...
Because he peaked!
Because it's just, this is such a beloved episode. Maybe he only comes when he has an idea.
That could be very true.
Yeah.
Where things have to cook.
Yeah. Even though it's a really solid self-contained story, like, I feel like this is much like Blink, where you can just show it to somebody and they don't really need to know much about anything going on other than the central premise of traveling in time and space.
Yeah. And that the Doctor has some silly little machines that he can use to do the story.
Yeah. There's a moment in the middle of the episode where they're walking to the church and Vincent points out that he can mm-hmm. see Amy is sad, mm-hmm. even though Amy doesn't know she's sad because Rory has been erased from her history. But Vincent is like, if you're not sad, why are you crying? And it's nice that Vincent can see that, because that fits with the story they're telling.
That Vincent can just see things that other people can't.
Yeah, he can see the color of her sadness coming
off.
Well,
yeah, it's see things that other people can't, i.e. Vincent sees the world so differently, but because of that, he can also see through people, literally.
Yeah. The only other real time that they call back to that is at one point, the Doctor accidentally calls Vincent Rory.
Well, that, and also the very beginning of the episode, Amy is going through a list of, like, you're being very nice to me.
Yeah.
Like, very nice. Like, we've gone to Arcadia, the Trojan Gardens. Like, what is this all about?
Yeah.
And the Doctor's like, I'm just nice. I just do nice things. And she goes, not like this. And I think that's just because the Doctor is like, oh no, I feel bad now.
Yeah, I killed your boyfriend and you don't remember.
You don't remember this, your fiance,
yeah.
this person that was very important to you.
Yeah.
You have no memory. Oh, geez. And like, the Doctor remembers,
mm-hmm.
which adds to the later note that I had made, that there's a moment where the Doctor is hugging Vincent,
mm-hmm.
and the camera lingers on Matt Smith for just like a half a second like longer, and you can see the sadness in his eyes. But the doctor just has so much sadness attached to him.
Yeah.
Just of not only being the last of his kind, but the fact that he does see like time and space. The way that Vincent sees the Earth, mm-hmm. the doctor sees the entire scope of the universe.
Yeah. In a way, for sure. I mean, we talked about this a little bit with the Meanwhile in the TARDIS, where he says that he can't see the glory of the universe anymore. He sees a star and just sees a star, but he needs humans to see things. And so I think there's a moment when Vincent's holding his hand and he's looking up at the night sky. The doctor says something akin to like, "You're right, Vincent, I've seen a lot of things, but nothing quite the way you do." And so I do think this goes back to that moment where he was saying that he can't see it anymore. And Vincent's one of the people that can.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a way that even the doctor's companions can't sometimes.
And even when they kill the cockatoo with mannish arms.
Yeah, the parrot polar bear as the as his rear view mirror details for him.
Yeah, and I forget who says it, but they say that he was frightened and so he lashed out.
Yeah.
And it's not like, wow, that's so like big brain thinking, but it is a like, oh yeah, like usually people that lash out and are mean and scary is because they're afraid of something.
Yeah.
And so even in like the doctor's case, mm-hmm. you know, he's not like, oh, the doctor lashes out. The doctor does have an amazing amount of pressure that he puts on himself.
Yeah.
Because he's afraid.
Yeah. It was Vincent that had said the Corpheus was afraid and lashing out because he started comparing him to the people that lash out at Vincent when they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
The people who yell at him on the street for his madness, the children that throw things at his house, it's just because they're afraid and they're frightened. And so it's one of those moments where it like regrounds Vincent again, where it sounds like he's not mad at the people that are mean to him. He mm-hmm. just, he acknowledges their fear. And it's another one of those moments that I think feeds into why that climax hits as hard as it does.
Yeah.
It's because it's not just that we're not just seeing someone who has gone his entire life going unappreciated finally get some amount of appreciation. As we're watching this person that we fully recognize as a three-dimensional character with like depth and wants and fears and sadness and joy, and we are watching him experience a lot of emotion at once, and it makes us do the same. And also that actor fucking kills it.
I just literally hats off, because as Bill Nye,
how many onions did that man have to chop offset to get his eyes that red?
It's the fact that he's not sobbing. He's not crying. He cries in the same way that I do, where it just kind of wells up and goes.
Yeah.
He is not stone-faced, but it all bubbles up and is just exploding out of his eyeballs.
Yeah, there's none of those like romantic single tears falling.
No.
His face like puffs up, is bright red. Like it looks like if you didn't know the scene, it looks like he's having an allergic reaction. That's like how intense it is.
And you never know. He might be.
Yeah.
He could be so very deathly afraid of or like allergic to kittens. Right underneath the camera is just the second AC holding a cat.
Turns out he has a horrible crippling allergy to Bill Nye.
To bow ties. and because Bill Nye's is so big, he's so allergic.
Yeah. And then there are a few other little moments, like when they first step into the room. I like that the doctor just sort of stands off to the side for Vincent and just has like a ta-da look on his face.
The only thing that was very, very wrong is that there is never that many people in a museum.
Yeah. I mean,
children sitting on the ground, strangely, I was like, yeah, that's accurate. If it's a field trip day, absolutely you would have kids everywhere, just sitting on the ground listening to a person talking. But there would not be nearly that many people unless it's like a traveling exhibition. Because I do take that back just a little bit.
See, I also say it is the Musée d'Orsay, which is a fairly famous museum, and it's in France.
Yeah.
So there's a very real chance that
me personally have never been to a particularly famous museum.
Yeah, when they're like tourist spots in that way, that they really could have more of.
I don't know. Because I would go to the Norton Simon a lot. And if you know anything about the Norton Simon, they have I don't know if they're still in possession of it, a large collection of Monet.
Yeah.
Paintings and the ballerina sculptures. Mm-hmm. And just, I remember going and being the only person in the museum and thinking it was fucking awesome. Because then I could get not very close. Obviously, they have their security guards that... if you get too close, they go, hey, which I never like, because my thing is like, I am a very tactile person. Mm-hmm. I would never touch it with people looking, but it's the, like, I need to get as close as I can, because like, that's the only way I can absorb something is by breathing in its air. If I cannot physically touch the thing. And they don't like you touching paintings either. It's so strange to me that they don't like you touching paintings.
I can't imagine why I can't put my oily little fingers all over these oil paintings. We just walk in and Mona Lisa just has like fingerprints all over her face. Still same little smile though.
That'd be so bad. That would be so bad. Oh my God. I understand why I can. That's why I make my own paintings, so I can touch them to my heart's content.
Yeah. I get sad just thinking about this episode. Sad is the wrong word. I get emotional just thinking about this episode sometimes.
Do you think that the actor playing Vincent hopped in his own time machine, went forward in time, and watched a bunch of people crying and sobbing while they're watching the episode, which is why he gets so emotional, is because he can see in his own like personal future how impactful moment would be.
Talking about this actor though, holy cow, he looks like Vincent Van Gogh.
Because there was a hot second where I was like, oh, it's a little odd that he's like so into Amy right out the gate. But I'm also, by the end of it, I was like, no, it's okay.
He's a good boy.
It's okay. Like, it's also, that's a very different, because what year was it? 1890.
Mm-hmm.
Life expectancy, not what it is now.
Especially not for him.
No. Oh, no. But life expectancy, certainly not.
But his name is Tony Curran. Curran. I hope I'm pronouncing that last name right.
Again, hats off.
Yeah, I do like that, because Tony Curran is Scottish. He also had a Scottish accent. And so basically they just made a joke. And because Karen Gillan is also using a Scottish accent, at one point he goes, you have the same accent I do. Are you also from Holland?
Yeah.
And I do like the idea in the same way that when Donna said Veni, Vidi, Vici, two people in Rome, they heard it as Welsh. I like the idea that the TARDIS's translation matrix turns all Scottish accents into Dutch accents and vice versa.
Yeah. But yeah, I was going to have something to say about like, oh, it's a little odd, but I can also imagine being like not only the odd man out because of how people view your particular, in this case, madness. Mm-hmm. But then to find somebody that's like, not only are they also an outsider, they look like me and they sound like me.
Yeah.
It's like being in a foreign country and finding another like English speaking person.
Especially because she is. And it's partly because she obviously knows what happens with Vincent Van Gogh's life and has an appreciation for his painting. She also constantly is heaping compliments onto him. And as a man with depression myself, there is nothing that will make me fall in love with you faster than heaping compliments onto me at undeserved moments.
At undeserved moments. Got it. Writing that down.
Yeah, he really, really looks like, they make him look like Vincent Van Gogh with the hair and the beard, especially.
Well, that, and it also like that. No offense, as somebody with a beard, I don't feel like it takes a lot to make one man look like another man if they have a beard.
Well, it's also like the face shape. Like they have a very similar nose structure.
Yeah, that's a little bit. Sit.
Yeah,
that's a little bit harder to fudge.
Yeah. So the fact that they found that guy that he's such a good actor and that he pulled all that together for this role is like such a rare thing. Like there are all kinds of actors that have been brought up to play famous people in the past, like Charles Dickens. That guy was a Dickens historian on top of playing Charles Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, that was a really big moment. And I'm sure there was a lot of greatness in that role, but because the role was mostly a shtick to have Dickens and ghosts, as opposed to this one, where it's really more about like fleshing out the character, we get way more from this actor than I think we did from that one, even though I would assume that the Dickens historian is more into Charles Dickens than this guy was into Vincent Van Gogh.
You don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that. But it feels true, certainly from their choice of careers.
Mm.
Can we also just briefly, we were talking about how the moment where Vincent's in the museum was making us cry.
While Bill Nye's rambling in the background, and I wanted so desperately to be able to like really glom on to every word he was saying, but I just couldn't.
Yeah. More specifically, what I was going to go about was the way that they like cued it in was that there are people walking outside of the museum holding a little radio and they're listening to the song that's about to play over this montage that we're going to get. You cheeky fucks.
Well, I like that Vincent is immediately distracted by that. And the doctor's like, nope, forget them.
Hey, we've got something more important to show you. We've got to show you your room.
Well, because there's also the part of me that's like, I do like Vincent's reaction to the TARDIS,
mm-hmm.
where it starts a little bit unamused and then blossoms into this like, hang on.
And there's a part of me that feels like that is tied into the way he sees color, because the new TARDIS is so orange.
Yeah.
That I'm sure for part of him, when he first steps in, all he gets is just a glow of orange. And then as his like vision settles and he gets more of the light, the more of the other colors in the TARDIS as his eyes do their thing, that he really takes in the wonder. And I enjoy him. That's one of my favorite moments for anybody who walks into the TARDIS, is having to step outside and walk around it to see.
Mm-hmm. Which I like, because originally the TARDIS seems to be in an alleyway backed up against the building, which means that the doctor specifically moved it into an area.
Yeah, it is plastered over with posters.
Which also, my other favorite detail, does not matter. It's something that made me extremely pleased, that it's plastered over with posters, but when they travel to modern day, the posters have all burnt off.
Yeah, from traveling through the time vortex.
I loved that.
It was a great little touch for sure.
So I was like, oh no, is this how the TARDIS is going to be forever? Like, of course not. It's going through the vacuum of space.
Yeah.
And time. The last little touch on this episode to make me go, okay.
Yeah. This to me is a magnificent episode. We still haven't gotten to my favorite episode yet, which I'm curious what happens when we get there. Because I actually have two episodes that are in the future that I like more than this one. One of which equally emotional, one of which just appeals to me as a sci-fi nerd. So I'm looking forward to us getting to those. I'm curious right now, because we've talked a lot about how emotional this made you. Compared to Blink.
I don't get emotional, Zach. I don't know how to cry.
How do you feel about this one compared to your previous favorite, Blink?
I like Blink better.
Okay.
If for no other reason, Blink particularly appeals to my love of horror.
Mm-hmm.
And conceptually, I find Weeping Angels way more captivating than
Invisible Chicken Monster,
than like Luchador Chicken Man. Yes.
No, oh, we should address that real quick. You did not get the point for cows. It was chicken.
I got double extra points though for Vincent Van Gogh and you giving away the surprise. He didn't say no. There were things about this episode I do like, because I can appreciate Vincent Van Gogh as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
He's not my favorite.
Yeah.
my favorite artist, because I don't even think you know the answer, is a man by the name of John Frame. He's not a painter. He makes these like beautiful, scary little like sculptures. And they had an exhibition of some of his stuff at the Huntington Garden. And it was at the time I was part of a writing program that paired you up with a writing mentor. Mm-hmm. And my mentor had, we were going to go for a session or like for a writing session. And she goes, no, I think you're really going to like this artist, Cassie. We're just going to spend time like in this little exhibit. I really think you're going to like him. And I get very excited when people know me to the point of being able to say, yes, I think that there is an artist you'll really like, because it's happened mm-hmm. twice. It's happened twice where I've had mentors or teachers that have said, here are some artists that you would like. John Frame is one. He does more like sculpturic. The other is a woman by the name of Cindy Sherman. And they could not be on more opposite sides of that spectrum. John Frame is this very like, think about like an artificer. Mm-hmm. Cindy Sherman makes some of the most atrocious like photographs I've ever seen. They are exquisite.
Speaking of other artists, we do get a couple of stories regarding the doctor and other artists. Michelangelo was one of my favorites, where he talks about being with Michelangelo while he painted the Sistine Chapel.
I remember watching Michelangelo painting the Sistine Chapel. Wow. What a whinger. I kept saying to him, look, if you're scared of heights, you shouldn't have taken the job, mate.
And then Picasso was another one where he says, one eye.
Picasso was I have a hole, but that's the general vibe is how can I take something to the nth degree. But yeah, Picasso, a horrible man.
I mean, I've not heard great things.
No.
Yeah, he says Picasso is like one eye, either side of the face. Never seemed to get that one.
No, he's not very nice.
There are a lot of like really nice touches with seeing a lot of Van Gogh's paintings inside his house because he can't sell any of them. So they really get to just like have them all up close to the camera.
I really did like him taking one of the paintings that he looked at himself and went, that's not very good. This is a much more important thing. Let me white it out real quick so that way I can sketch the monster I'm seeing. And the doctor and Amy going, no! Oh, geez. Oh, that was I liked that one.
Yeah, I've never looked up to see if that was a reference to like a lost painting or something.
It's just because like that is something very relatable as an artist of being like, I don't like this. I'm just going to tear it up. I'm going to do something different. Mm-hmm. And if somebody is like, wait, no. When I was a kid, I had that exact thing happen to me where I had a drawing of a horse. It was a bad drawing of a horse. I had colored it in hoping that I could make it look good. And it did not turn out great. I was going to throw it away. And my friend, Samantha, mm-hmm. was like, no, I love that drawing. And she still has it. It was hanging up in her bedroom. I don't know if she still, I believe that when she moved out, she took all of the like things and stuff hanging in her bedroom. So I'm pretty certain she still has it, but it might be buried away. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that we can share my terrible drawing of a horse that she found really endearing. But like I've also done that where if you draw me a little thing, like I've had coworkers draw little pictures and stuff like on my coffee cups, like I'll keep those just because like I think they're sweet. Mm-hmm. And that's it's something to be said of like nine times out of ten the artists themselves will not look at their work and say, ah, this is something I truly love and I'm happy and proud to show it off, when it's something that you're like, it's a regular practice for you. Mm-hmm. And so I really liked his mentality of like, oh, this is just a crappy painting. This is a much more important thing. And then in this case, the audience's reaction, AKA the doctor and Amy, was that of, utter shock and horror.
Yeah.
That he would deface one of his own paintings.
Yeah.
But we did also get a little bit of a full, like, circle catharsis moment of, like, yes, that was a painting of a vase of flowers that he destroyed. Mm-hmm. But then he did make another painting of a vase of flowers.
Yeah, because it was one that she really liked.
It was sunflowers for Amy.
Yeah, I did really like when they walk out and Amy's just like surrounded by sunflowers. She's like, I just thought you'd like to paint them. And then Vincent goes off on this like, oh, they're not my favorite flower, but he does have like long, detailed thoughts about what sunflowers mean to him.
I loved it.
And I'm like, you have more fleshed out thoughts about this thing that you don't like all that much than I do about most things I like very much.
Zach, I need you to understand, having fully fleshed out, realized thoughts about things you don't like is my whole deal on this fucking podcast.
On this earth. On this earth, that is how you
are. I think it's way more interesting to have a like concrete, like, I don't like this thing. I'm gonna talk about it because it becomes way more subjective then.
Mm-hmm.
And you do kind of have to work harder to have people see your side.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also interesting what he had to say about sunflowers, because it was usually the association, at least for me, is like sunflowers. They bloom between summer and fall, so they are kind of like an in-between
mm-hmm.
flower. They face the sun, their source of life and power, and, you know, but then they die in the most horrifying way, where they just kind of shrivel up and bend over, and they just are scary.
Yeah, he said they reminded him of humans in a way, with the way that they like stretch out and face the sun and then crumble into themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very then, like, poetic way of looking at them.
And then like they did put sunflowers on that poor girl's casket as they were doing the funeral procession,
mm-hmm.
which like I guess it's just a way to get the sunflowers back into the episode. And also, she might have liked sunflowers. Who's to say?
Yeah. It's more just more thematic things with the way Vincent likes sunflowers. It just made me
go. It's one of those sayings where I was like, this is dumb. Sunflowers are stupid. And then they came up again at the end and I cried like a little bitch.
Yeah, and I really liked that final moment where Amy's like, we didn't really change anything. And he's like, oh, we changed a couple of things. And you can see that Crophaeus is no longer in the church. But more importantly, there's a painting that has for Amy, Vincent.
I just said it.
Yeah.
Which I'm glad that they went that route, because I was like, there's going to be a fucking painting of like Amy and the doctor, and it's going to be really thin. Like, because it would not have surprised me if they got somebody who, you know, is a like copycat artist to be like, here, we need you to do a painting that looks like Vincent van Gogh,
mm-hmm.
but also needs to have these two people in it. I wasn't going to be surprised if they did that, but I'm kind of glad that they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't put another, have a regular painting of Van Gogh and then put a TARDIS in the background or something.
Because there's plenty of those.
Yeah. And this, it does feel more important because it really feels like Vincent did like Amy more. Not necessarily that he disliked the doctor, but there really was a part of it where Vincent's like, I would live with Amy for the rest of my life.
He said he not proposes to her, but he's like, are you sure you don't want to get married? We could have a dozen kids.
Yeah, we could have children by the dozen. Not a dozen kids. Children by the dozen.
This is also, you know, the 1890s, you did have a lot of children because most of them would die.
Yeah. I like her response was eek.
Yeah. And then it was the, no, I'm not the marrying type. Like, oh,
that's because the person she would marry isn't there right now.
She doesn't even know that she's not the marrying type anymore. But that also lends credence to the doctor being nice to her and him being in possession of the engagement ring Rory got her. That's going to happen. she's going to misunderstand this whole situation. I know it because I'm smart.
Well, maybe she'll misunderstand it on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Boo hoo is indeed.
Whoa.
You like that one?
I did.
Hey, folks. This episode sure talked about a lot of heavy stuff, so I hope you're all doing well, taking care of yourselves, reaching out to loved ones and or professional if you're dealing with any kind of mental health problems of your own. Cassie and I have both had stints in therapy. We definitely understand and support anyone seeking help when they're feeling even just a little bit off in life. We also hope that we've added to your pile of good things today. If we did, be sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a like or 5 stars wherever you're listening now. You can find us on Blue Sky Threads, Twitter, and Instagram at WIMDPOD. That's WIMDPOD. This episode is brought to you by our patrons over on Patreon, especially those pledging at our Big Daddy Dalek tier, Andrew Blewett and David Gansel. How blessed we are as a podcast to have two dads. If you're interested in joining them and supporting us, you can find us at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where if you pledge as little as $1 a month, you get episodes of this podcast a whole week early. Speaking of, next week, we get an episode with another very special cameo. It's James Corden? Hang on, am I reading that right? Hey, is this right? Do I have to do, like, carpool karaoke or something? Well, I guess we'll find out next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.